Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, much of what we'll be talking about today revolves around the president's primetime speech on Sunday night, only the third time he's addressed the nation from the Oval Office. And a couple of clips from that speech actually make the good martini. So we wanted to give the president credit on a couple of fronts. Number one, and this is, as some have said, a very low bar to clear, but the president finally admitted that a couple of events that virtually everyone else knew were terrorist attacks actually were terrorist attacks.
Terrorists turn to less complicated acts of violence, like the mass shootings that are all too common in our society. It is this type of attack that we saw at Fort Hood in 2009, in Chattanooga earlier this year, and now in San Bernardino.
For the longest time, the Pentagon classified Fort Hood as a workplace violence, and Purple Hearts weren't given out for years after that because of that designation. The president also saying, while certainly most Muslims in the United States aren't terrorists, they do have a responsibility to condemn it.
That does not mean denying the fact that an extremist ideology has spread within some Muslim communities. It's a real problem that Muslims must confront without excuse. Muslim leaders here and around the globe have to continue working with us to decisively and unequivocally reject the hateful ideology that groups like ISIL and Al-Qaeda promote, to speak out against not just acts of violence, but also those interpretations of Islam that are incompatible with the values of religious tolerance, mutual respect, and human dignity.
So, Jim, as mentioned at the outset, things you would have expected a while ago, but it's good to hear him from this president.
Two points I'm going to make about this. One is that it was just last month the FBI director was in Tennessee, was asked about the Chattanooga shooting, and made this really strange comment saying that the motivation may never be truly known. From the moment we heard about this, that the target is very particular. Some of the folks who knew the shooter had said he had expressed, you know, jihadist-style comments. He was very angry at the United States government. It was not shooting up an IRS office or something like that. This was definitely targeting the U.S. military. So now, finally, the President Obama has acknowledged, yes, this is a case of Islamist terrorism. And the other thing is that paragraph about the responsibilities of Muslim communities in the United States and around the world. I'm not sure that's a huge deal, and you could argue we are having a very low bar for our good martini today. But, you know, there was a guy at the Daily Beast who said, look, this is more than the president has said about this in the past, and he has said it from an Oval Office address on a Sunday night. So maybe from some perspective, somebody could say, okay, look, if you feel like the moment something terrible like this happens, you're lectured about Islamophobia and, you know, we have to preemptively stop this backlash from non-Muslim Americans targeting Muslim Americans. If you feel like there's been a certain lack of concerted effort in Muslim communities to stop this, then maybe there's something to that. Maybe there is some indication that that the president did at least, you know, underline this point. This paragraph he said was more than he said before, and maybe it'll do some good. Maybe not, but at least we should acknowledge the president is at least not acknowledging this question of whether, you know, Muslim American communities are giving the authorities as much help as they could in rooting out the extremists within their communities.
All right, on to the bad parts of the speech, and we picked two in particular here, but they kind of fit into the same idea here, because the president, right before the Paris attacks, in fact, the same day the interview came out, said that ISIS was contained. Then the day before Thanksgiving, he said that there was not any credible threat to the American homeland. And obviously that attack in San Bernardino triggered a great deal of increased concern about the level of security here in the United States. So the president's response to the expanding threat of ISIS sounded a lot like, as you pointed out, Jim, reheated leftovers. Listen to the language here as the president laid out his agenda for defeating ISIS.
First, our military will continue to hunt down terrorist plotters in any country where it is necessary. Second, we will continue to provide training and equipment to tens of thousands of Iraqi and Syrian forces fighting ISIL on the ground so that we take away their safe havens. Third, we're working with friends and allies to stop ISIL's operations, to disrupt plots, cut off their financing, and prevent them from recruiting more fighters. Fourth, with American leadership, the international community has begun to establish a process and timeline to pursue ceasefires and a political resolution to the Syrian war.
shorter version, we're going to keep doing exactly what we have been doing.
Yeah, and if you think it was just crazy right-wingers like you and me, Greg, who were unimpressed, just posted in the corner, Andrea Mitchell pointed out, the present begins with a metaphor of asking, does America have cancer for which there is no immediate cure? For obvious reasons, when people hear cancer, they you know, like you could argue, yes, that the threat of Islamists is you know, as serious as cancer, but right after we've just seen two terrorists, you know, slip through all of our vaunted DHS counterterrorism screening efforts in this, we've just seen, you know, 35 Americans get shot, 14 Americans get killed. This was the most serious terror attack on American soil since 9/11, and Obama's basically, don't worry, this approach is going to work eventually. Just think of it as cancer. And for obvious reasons, it didn't. It wasn't very reassuring. The other thing which kind of nagged at me is that he said last night, Greg, there is no indication that they were ordered by an outside force, that they were part of a larger cell. The president says this, and then like a half hour later, there's word from Fox News quoting, admittedly, unnamed sources in the intelligence community. Let's assume their sources know what they're talking about. They're saying that they're looking at the financing coming from overseas. The idea, look, this is a lot of guns and ammunition and pipe bombs for a guy making money as a county health inspector. It really doesn't seem all that implausible there could be some sort of financial support. And obviously with their travels, being in Saudi, being, you know, wondering what exactly the connections are, I'm hoping, Greg, the president has not jumped the gun again. I mean, it would be kind of a nice little trifecta if the day before Paris he says ISIS is contained. While the San Bernardino shootings are going on, he says our homeland has never been more protected. And if today he says there's no foreign connection, and later on we find out it was financed by overseas terrorists. It would be kind of a perfect threesome there. Needless to say, a lot to be bothered by in the president's address yesterday.
Yeah, certainly. And so what we just played earlier was how ISIS is going to be defeated. Here's the president explaining why.
My fellow Americans, I am confident we will succeed in this mission because we are on the right side of history.
Jim, I know there are fewer Obama lines that grind your gears worse than that one. What do you make of it?
Well, I mean, here's, you know, how different is that from saying, my fellow Americans, this is going to turn out okay at the end? Obama loves to say, look, we're on the right side of history. They're on the wrong side of history. As somebody put it last night, you only get to be on the right side of history if you win the fight. You know, winners get to write the history. The losers get forgotten. Or the losers have their description in the history books written by the winners. If we're on the right side of history, darn it, let's act like it, okay? Let's put foot to butt to these guys, all right? They have no justification for what they're doing. They're openly genocidal. They enslave women. What more motivation do we need to wipe these guys off the face of the earth? And, you know, in this little rant here, I've already shown more passion than the president did. And so I just... It really was an exasperating performance from the president last night, Greg.
Well, this probably won't help your mood, although it's not related to the president. This
it never does. Go ahead.
The crazy martini is not good for the blood pressure usually, but this is from CNN. And as you mentioned, and the president said in the speech last night, you know, it's a terrorist attack. We know that. They were on the dark path of radicalization and so forth, but we're just not sure. It's hard to figure out the motivation and so forth. Becoming less hard to figure out the motivation. According to CNN, Farouk was fixated on Israel and supported ISIS's ideology of establishing an Islamic caliphate, his father told an Italian newspaper. Before the shooting, the younger Farouk had expressed some troubling beliefs, his father told La Stampa newspaper. Quote, he said he shared the ideology of al-Baghdadi to create an Islamic state, and he was fixated on Israel, the elder Farouk said, referring to the ISIS leader. He also talked about how upset he was that his son had bought a weapon, and when his father confronted him, he didn't seem concerned at all. So, Jim, if only there were clues.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Pops, for helping us out here. So you know your son is becoming, as in the words, you know, a follower of ISIS. Like, he likes al-Baghdadi. You know he's got guns. What do you think is going to happen? Oh, but he'll remain, you know, a law-abiding citizen for the rest of his days, you know. We love our children. It's natural for members of the family to arguably either be in denial or be in a you know, having very conflicted feelings about this. But if you're a loved one, if you think there's a chance they could do this, I mean, like, good, big-hearted people do not suddenly embrace ISIS, right? I'm kind of baffled by this interview, and I suppose we're like, he wants us to feel sympathetic to him or sympathetic to his side. I don't. It's rather baffling to see people saying that, and you add up the neighbor who said that. He saw Arab men hanging around and thought about reporting it, but didn't want to do it because he didn't want to be considered Islamophobic. I don't know whether this is 2020 hindsight and people remembering things that suddenly look different in the light of the attacks, or whether, no, people really knew this was a ticking time bomb, but they didn't want to do something about it out of either personal connection or fear of a false alarm. And it's just baffling and frustrating. We look at this and say, how could nobody know these guys this pair is terrorists? And apparently people did know, they just didn't feel like it was worth doing anything about. And here we are, Greg. Happy Monday, everybody.
That's the kickoff to what I'm sure will be an exemplary week on the three martini lunch of happy, happy news. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next Three Martini Lunch.